All right, we're starting here on the top of Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss what it had mentioned when it came to the explanation of our Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan's explanation that our Mishnah is a din derabbanan, that we impose a shvua over here because we're afraid that people are going to come and grab away an aveda that was found by their friends. The Gemara asks a very basic question is, why don't we then invoke the principle, which is, Migo de choshed amamona, choshed nami ashvuata. If we don't trust this guy with regards to monetary matters, why do all of a sudden we trust him with regards to the Shvua? We know that if a person is a gazlan, or deemed to be a thief in any way, al tashet eid chamas, you're not allowed to make someone who's a gazlan into an aid, they lose nemanut, they lose their ability to have eidut, the same should be true with a Shvua. So the Gemara comes to prove, lo amrinan, we don't say this, we don't say this concept of, migo de choshed amamona, choshed ashvuata. The Gemara went through a number of proofs, and now continues with Rab Nachman's proof over here. Rav Nachman in the Gemara and Shvuot is the innovator of the Shvuot Heset. Over there, there are two versions of Rav Nachman's statement here. The Gemara only brings the first of those two, which the Balei Tosafot speak about that pushing us towards the fact that we paskin like that sheet of Rav Nachman. Although earlier on, Tosafot discussed the fact that the Rabbeinu Tam was reluctant to force a Shvuot Heset whenever there was not a Drora de Mimona, which is what the second Lashon requires in Shavuot. But here, based on that first Lashon, Rav Nachman introduced the idea that when you make a complete denial of a claim, that you have to take a Shavua. Remember, Min HaTorah, there's only an obligation for a Shavua, b'mode b'miktzat. That means that if you deny the whole thing, if you're kofer b'kol, you would not take any Shavua. What Rav Nachman, who's a Dayan, realized is that the people got smart, which is the same thing that we discussed on Daf Dalet, which is that if the guy knows that if he says two, they're going to make him take a Shavua, and if he says three, they're not going to make him take a Shavua. He'll say three, so he doesn't have to take a Shavua. So the same thing happened over here. Over time, people realized if they're modeh b'miktzat, they're going to have to take a Shavua. They're kofer b'kol, they're not going to have to take a Shavua. So Rav Nachman introduces the Shavuot HaSeit, which is that when you're kofer b'kol, when you deny everything, there's an imposed Shavua d'Rabbanan that you have to take a Shavua to that effect, that you don't owe anything. Now, that takes away the option anymore to say that kofer b'kol is a better option than modeh b'miktzat, because I'm going to end up with a Shavua in either case. One's a Shavua d'Oraita, one's a Shavua d'Rabbanan. The Gemara and Shavuot will discuss maybe what the differences are between those two types of Shavuot, but in the end, the person will have to take a Shavua. It's not a better option for them anymore. All right, so now, Neima. So let us say, Migo de Choshed Amamona, Choshed HaShavuot. The whole reason we're compelling him to take the Shavuot HaSeit is because we don't believe him. When he says, I'm denying the claim, we don't believe him. Rashi says over here, but name amigo is because the meis panav likfor akol lav dishtmute bay. This is Rashi the Shitato, who says that a person who takes that amilveh will never be kofer bakol because they can't be meis panav. They can't bring themselves to look the guy in the eye after he did him this tova and deny the whole claim. So if he does this, then he's certainly not just lishtmute. He's not trying to wiggle his way out of this and buy some time. He's clearly saying this because he either is a gazlan, or he's telling the truth. You have to take your pick. So that's what Rashi says, that if we're worried about him telling the truth, then that's why we're forcing the Shavua, that it's clear there that lav dishtmute bay, he's not trying to slip out of the claim. And that means that he is deemed to be, or we worry about him being a gazlan. If that's the case, how does he take a Shavua? Tosafot says, the Gemara in Shavuot says that that's not the case, that the person's kofer b'kol is also ushtemute. He's trying to slip out of it. Again, if you close the avenue of modeh b'miktzat to him, because then he has to take a Shavua, so kofer b'kol comes the next best option for him, even if he wants to postpone the loan and give it back. And so it's also ishtemute. So Tosfot says that Rav Nachman's din of mashbina toshvot haseit applies not only in cases ishtemute, for instance, in a case where the guy's holding the object in his hand, and he says to him, that's my little thing that you're holding, that's mine, and the guy denies it. In that case, you can't say he's trying to slip out of paying it back or giving it back, because he has it functionally in front of him. So in that case, you still take a Shavuot HaSeit, or karka. Karka is something that can never be moved. It can't be ishtemute, because the karka doesn't go anywhere that you can be slipping out or looking for money to repay. The karka's here. It's in front of us. So Tosfot in the end says that even though Shavuot HaSeit is a case of ishtemute, there are manifestations of it that are shelo ishtemute. Rashi sees it as more generically that this is a case of lav ishtemute, but Tosfot says that there are cases where you can come up with that. So now the Gemara says, so name amigo de choshed amamona choshed shavuata, vitu. Now the Gemara brings an additional proof. What the assumption here is clearly is that we don't invoke that principle, that just because you're Choshra Mamona doesn't automatically make you Choshra Shvuata, and that's the answer to the quandary that we're in here with Rav Nachman's statement. So Gemara says, I have another proof to that too. Hadatani Rabbi Chia. Shneim Nishbaim Notlimi Balabait. So here is the case that we mentioned before from the Mishnah and Shvuot. It's interesting here. Tosfot is bothered by the fact that the Gemara quotes a bright of Rabbi Chia and not the Mishnah that we already mentioned before. This is the case where the Balabait is supposed to pay his Paulim. He says to the Chenvani, I'm going to send them to you. Give them credit. The Paulim say, we never got paid. The Chenvani says, I gave them credit. And they both want to get paid. So the Mishnah says they both take a Shvuah. The Paulim take a Shvuah and the Balabait pays them. The Chenvani takes a Shvuah and he pays them. There we know for certain one of them is lying. It has to be one of them is lying, and we don't invoke the principle, Nemo Migo de Chashida Mamona, Chashida Shvuoto. Again, Tosfot is bothered by the fact we bring a bright of Rabbi Chia instead of the Mishnah of Shvuot. In the end, Tosfot says there is a back and forth there between Rabbi and Rabbi Chia about this din, and Rabbi Chia in the end convinces Rabbi that this is the right outcome, this is the right din. And therefore, Tosfot says, basically, the credit for Rabbi putting in the Mishnah is Rabbi Chia. So that's why the Gemara quoted Rabbi Chia as the source. The other thing to note is that the Gemara has other options to bring here and doesn't bring them. But the options that the Gemara brings are cases where it's obvious that they have a gazlan. Like here, by this case, where both of them take a shvuah, there's no question that one of them is a gazlan. It's not a safek gazlan. Here we know there's a gazlan. We know someone is lying about their stance, yet we still believe them with the shvuah. And so the Gemara is bringing examples that are so obvious that we have to hold that Migo, that is Choshed Amona, does not preclude your ability to make a Shvuah. This is a great example of that. Betu, Ha'amar Rav Sheshet, Shalosh Shvuot Mashbin Oto. When it comes to a Shomer Chinam, that makes a claim of Gnevo or Veda, he takes three different Shvuot. Shvuah Shalo Pashatiba, a Shvuah that I was not negligent in it. What the negligence is not exactly clear here. But let's assume that I wasn't negligent in the Shmirah, that I watched it properly. Shvuah shalo shalachti bayad. Rashi claims the shvuah shalachti bayad because I shalach bayad, had he been shalach yad, have he gazlan. Then he's a thief. And then he'd be chayiv in the onsin for it, so therefore he can't be poter himself with the claim of gneva and aveda. Shlichut yad, by definition, would make him responsible for anything that happened to the object. Shvuah she'ena bishuti, and a shvuah that it's not in my possession. According to Rashi, is that the question derives from Shvuah She'enu Birshuti. What's the Cheshash? That he's holding on to it. And he's keeping it, even though he's saying that it's lost or it's Nignav. Basically, you're Choshesh, that he is a Ganav in this case. And that's what the question is from. Tosafot, back on Daf Gimel, says that the question is from Shlichud Yad. Tosafot says Shlichud Yad as being different than Rashi. Tosafot over here brings the Shita to Rabbeinu Tam, that the Shvuah Shalosh Shalakti Bayad, Mefereish Rabbeinu Tam, Shalo Achla. He makes a shvuah that he didn't eat it. And he didn't consume the animal that he is watching. Because the Gemara further on says, v'nishbar unishba ein ro'eh, that there was nobody witness what took place here. Hayeshua, if someone witnessed it, yavi ra'ya v'yipater, he'll bring a proof and he's patur. V'hashem ha'shalach bayad, maybe he was sholeach yad by it. And if he's sholeach yad by it, then it would be chayav in onsin, despite the fact that they're testifying to the fact that it was nishbar or nishba. So Tosfot says one thing, maybe you do have to take the shvuah shalo shalach bayad, even if you're patur from the shvuah of nentsa. Or maybe the shvuah shalo shalach bayad is only through gilgul shvuah shalo pashati ba. And where there are witnesses that the animal was killed in front of us, we know that there was no pshia. And therefore you won't take the shvuah shalo shalach bayad. But then the Rabbeinu Tam says that that doesn't make sense because Gilgul Shvuah, none of these things would apply over here because it's not similar to the other Shvuot. But rather, the Shvuah Shoshloch Tebiyad is coming to deal with this issue of a case where he ate it. And in that case, you're not going to face a situation in which there are witnesses telling us that it's dead in front of us. Their machloket might revolve around when exactly is the chashad about his lying. If it's with regards to Shliach Yad, according to the way Rashi states it, then that could have happened in the past. And now it was Nignav Ne'avad, and he's not necessarily not telling the truth. It was stolen. It was taken away. He is responsible because he was Sholeach Yad in it, but he's trying to buy time now to repay it or give it back. In that case, you may be a reason not to say that he's Chashud HaMamona because he's Rak being Mishtamet. And therefore Rashi says that it's Shvuah She'enu Birshuto is the reason here that we are saying that Migo, the Chashud HaMamona, should be Chashud Shvuata. Sheina Bershuto is not something we can say Ishtamet, that he's trying to get out of it. Shua Sheina Bershuto, and we find in his possession, that's someone who is an outright gazlan. And that's why he would be incriminated in this case, and he shouldn't be believed by the Shua. Whereas Tosfa believes, but in a case where he was Sholeach Bayad, at that moment he became a gazlan. And once he's deemed to be a gazlan, then there's no turning back the tables. Once you're a gazlan, you have no nemanut. And so therefore, Tosfo believes that the question of nemanut has to do with even back at the time that he acted. And therefore, making him into a shalech bayad, a gazlan, already determines that he shouldn't be believed about the shvua today. On the other hand, for Rashi, we're worried about now. When he's taking the shvua, is he not neman? If he's shalech bayad a long time ago, he could still be ishtemute ishtamit right now, about buying time to repay it or deal with it now. Other than if he says shvua sheni bershuti and he's dealing with the moment now and we find it in his possession, that's clearly something of a problem because then he's clearly a gazlan. Whereas Tosfa believes he says shvua sheni bershuti and maybe over here he can't find it and therefore he's trying to buy time until he finds it. It's ishtemute ishtemute with the shvua sheni bershuti. So the Balei Tosafot focus on the period of time of the gzela and that determination makes it that there is a problem with this individual, and when you do shlichut yad, because Rashi focuses at the time of the shvua, where shlichut yad could already be mishtumute ishtumate at that time, and shvua sheni bershuti is much more focused on the issue at hand, which is the fact that he does or does not have it in his possession. So that might be the difference between Balei Tosafot and Rashi as to what they focus on as being the question here. Balei Tosafot focuses on shlichut yad, Rashi focuses on sheino bershuto. Alright, so now, based on that, again, another proof here, Name amigo de chashid mamona chashid shvata. Ella, the conclusion must be lo amrina amigo de chashid mamona chashid ashvata. We don't say that. We don't come to that conclusion, and it's for the reason that you all mentioned, which is that people take a shvua much more seriously than mamona, stealing of money or safek or when they can justify it and come up with reasons to steal money. That's one thing. To have to take a shvua b'shem Hashem, that's a very different thing. People are scared of taking such a shvua. And for that reason, we do not extrapolate whatever they feel about or what they would do with Mamon, we don't extrapolate to Shvuah. And we use Shvuah as a blocking vehicle to say, people will tell the truth then, and that's our way of determining whether they're really telling the truth. Abaye now comes to argue on Rabbi Yochanan's assumption about our Mishnah. How far reaching that statement is questionable, and the Rishonim speak about that. He says here, Chashinan, Shema milve yishana yeshlo alav. We worry about the fact that this guy has an old outstanding debt in this situation. So what happens is we have the two guys grabbing onto the item and they're coming to court. One guy says, I picked up the Aveda. The other guy says, I also picked up the Aveda. But the other guy picked up the Aveda maybe even after the fact because he has this old loan outstanding with this guy he's never paid back. Finally, he sees him with something that he can grab and get possession of so that he can actually get repaid for that loan. This guy denies it, doesn't want to repay the loan. So he jumps in to grab it. So that's our fear here, is that he has this outstanding loan that he wants to collect for. Now instead of what Rabbi Yochanan said, we're not just afraid of people just grabbing things willy-nilly out of other people's possession. That's a far-fetched chashash, Abaye says. Our real chashash here is that someone's going to justifiably come and grab it here because he wants to get repaid. Iachi nishko below shvua. If that's the case, why do we want him to take a shvua? Because in the end, if he believes that he's taking it rightfully, he will take the shvua anyway. Meaning that the shvua for him is not an impediment to taking of the item because it's his. As far as he's concerned, the guy owes him the money. This is the repayment for the loan. So he's taking it justifiably. And so he'll take a shvua to that effect anyway. So what's the point of putting a shvua on him? El chashinan shema safek milve yishana yesh lo alav. Now the safek here, or the problem is that we're afraid this guy has a outstanding loan that he does not remember if he collected or didn't collect on it, or if he had extended the credit or not. He has some foggy memory about the fact that this guy had borrowed money from him and never repaid it. So now, v'lav aminan, tafis mamona misveka mishtaba nami misafek. So wait a minute. Why don't you then say that if the guy's willing to grab someone else's possessions, because he has a foggy memory about some outstanding loan, then he's going to take the shvua to that same effect. I mean, if he's willing to grab property misafek, then he'll also take a shvua misafek. What's the inhibiting factor with the shvua? So this comes down to what we just discussed over here. Amar Rav Sheshet Brei Ravidi, Parsha Inish misafek shvua, v'lo Parsha Inish misafek mimona. This is the difference. People will back away from taking a shvuah misafek, when they're in doubt, they know that a shvuah is a serious issue. And also, we're going to see in a second, it's something that is irreversible. Whereas by mamona, if a person grabs the money, even if they are not justified, they're willing to do that, first of all. And more importantly, they know they can always give it back if they're wrong. So there it is a reversible situation. And that's what Gemara says, my taima. Mamon ite bechazara, shvua lete bechazara. Shvua is an absolute, it's a line in the sand, and you have to, you're going to take a position, you can't go back on it. And so people are not going to be willing to take a shvua misafek. So a shvua is a preventative measure against people taking or grabbing money misafek, that they could be toe-faced the money misafek. Right, so now the question is, what exactly is the implications of Abaye's statement? So you have two possibilities. Abaye is arguing Rabbi Yochanan in the explanation of our Mishnah. You could argue, and this is the way that the Ramban and others argue, is that it's a narrow machloket. Abaye subscribes to what we've said until now, that is, just because you're chashud mamon doesn't mean you're chashud ashvuata. That principle stands. The only machloket between them is, how do I explain our Mishnah? What's the scenario in our Mishnah? So Abaye says it's not what Rabbi Yochanan said. The guy's coming willy-nilly and grabbing things. It has to be something where a person feels justified in taking it, but he's justified misafek. And that's how Abaye explains our Mishnah. And that's why we have the Shvuah there to prevent such incidents, because he sees the Shvuah as a vehicle that will block the person from doing or acting in that way. The way that Tosafot reads it, Rashi similarly seems to read it this way, is that this is an outright argument with all the premises we've had until now. He disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan, and by disagreeing with Rabbi Yochanan, he also now unwinds this whole thing about Migo, that your Chashud HaMamona, Chashud HaShvuata doesn't apply. He says, yes, it does. If you're Chashud HaMamona, you're Chashud HaShvuata. And that's why Abaye says Rabbi Yochanan's case is wrong. Because if the guy's willing to go and grab the stuff, he's also going to be willing to lie under oath. And so that's why he creates a case of safek. How's that different than Rabbi Yochanan's case? Safek is different. But the guy's willing to steal outright, that means he's also willing to lie outright under shvuah. In a case where he grabs it because he's justified under safek, then he won't take a shvuah be safek. That's Abaye's logic. Then what Tosafot does, you can see in Tosafot, you can see in Rashi, they go and apply that to all the questions we had before. All the cases we had before, we asked, isn't this evidence of the fact that just because you're chashud mamona, you're not chashud shvuata? The answer is, all those cases are milveh yishana, safek milveh yishana. We always say that the guy maybe had some old outstanding loan be safek, and therefore we can justify his stealing, and therefore we can say his shvuah will be taken in truth. The problem that they run into now is, what about a regular gazlan? Why can't we say a regular gazlan? Give him the benefit of the doubt that he's a gazlan, and therefore he should be believed with his shvuah. We know that doesn't work. A gazlan loses his nemanu, the regards to his shvuah. And also, kofer bipikadon. Someone who denies the pikadon, we said before, that's not called ishtimute, that's called a problem of nemanut, and the guy is not believed with the shvuah anymore. But why not? Say that he was grabbing it for an old outstanding loan. So what Tosafot says is, we will only do that where there's a safek in this situation. Meaning that if we have questions about your integrity, then together with the possibility that there was this outstanding loan in the past, we put those together and you don't lose your nemanut. But if you are in a situation where it's clear that you did something wrong, and now you want to now overlay this on top and say, okay, he really didn't lie, that we won't do. If you're an outright gazlan, or if you are an outright kofer bepikadon, we're not going to say dan lekaf schut that maybe there was this old outstanding loan. That's too much. The guy took an action which is clearly problematic and is gezel. That we won't justify, and there he'll lose his nemanut. But in a case where it's only a safek, we don't know what the story is, that's why we want him to take a shvuah. So we are choshed, we worry about him doing this, but if I can put that together with the fact that maybe he had some justifiable reason for doing it, then he doesn't lose his nemanut by shvuah. And that's how Rashi and Tosafot learn the sugya, that Abaye is disagreeing wholeheartedly with the whole sugya, not just Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of our Mishnah, but the whole premise of the shvuah and mamon interplay. He says, migo, the choshed mamona, choshed shvuata. It's just not applicable in most cases, because in most cases we can come up with a reason to justify your behavior. But in cases where we can't justify your behavior, then you would be chashud ashvuata. The reason that others don't like this explanation is because who says you're allowed to grab someone else's property even if there was an outstanding loan that's there? You have a legal claim against it. It doesn't mean you have the right to go and take the law into your own hands and grab it. So that might be the difference in the Rishonim's explanation over here, is how justified do we think that this person is in grabbing the property to protect himself in this safek milveh. And depending on how you feel about that, then we could say that whether that's a justification for his behavior. Because if you believe that that's not justified behavior, then you want to narrow the cases where it's applicable. We use this as a tliyah to say that the guy's not really guilty. So we'll use it in the Mishnah, but not broadly. If you believe that maybe the person's allowed to do this, or he's not so unjustified in doing this, then already you could use it in a more broader sense. You could try to explain all these cases and try to justify all these cases and say maybe he's not a liar in all of these cases. And that what allows us to grant him the right to take a shvua. All right, now we're going to move on to a Gemara. It's a Gemara that's known famously in Bava Metzia. All the yeshivas will learn the Perek Rishon in Bava Metzia. It's called Tachfa Kohen. It's a very, very difficult sugya. The Rishonim and the Achronim all argue about how to explain the flow of the sugya. We're going to try to stay as simple as possible. We'll use Rashi's Pshat over here to try to explain it. But to know that there are many, many, many nuances here and many different paths to explain the Gemara, because it's not perfectly easy to understand the logic through it. And therefore, it always leads to people then trying to explain it differently to try to make it smoother or more understandable. Which is here, Boi Rabbi Zera, Takfa Echad Bifaneinu Mahu. If one of the two parties that is Ochez in this Talit grabs it away from the other party, Mahu, what is the din in that case? Mar says, Hey Chidami, what exactly is the scenario? Ida Shatik, if the person who is having the item grabbed away from him is silent, Oduye Odile. Shtika gehoda'a, the silence is acquiescence, and the fact that he doesn't demur over here shows you that he must believe that the other party really has the rights. So that can't be the scenario. Ve'ida katzavach, on the other hand, if he is rejecting it by screaming and saying the whole time that it's mine when he's taken away from him, ma'avilei demevad, what more could you have asked for him in that situation? He was overpowered by the other guy, but he is demurring the whole time. And so we know that he's not giving up his ownership or his rights over here. The assumption being, as Rashi notes over here, that this is all prior to the fact that they took their shvu'ah in court to substantiate their claim of the half of the talit that they are holding on to, which you could infer from that in Rashi that had it been that tkifa was done after the shvu'ah, would have no meaning at that point, because once they've taken the shvu'ah and substantiated their claim, their silence at that point is not meaningful because they've already demonstrated in front of Beit Din that where they were holding on to it, and they took a shvuah to that effect. But the scenario is, lo, tzricha dishotik mikara, he was silent up front, v'hadar tzavach, and then only afterwards did he begin to scream about it. My, what's the din in that situation? Midi ishtik, because he was silent up front, oduye, odile, that was silence, was an admission, acquiescence to the fact that the other guy grabbed it. Now, the truth is, it does not give up his rights to make a claim here and say kula shali, just that the burden of proof will now be on him to substantiate the fact that it's his. As long as he's holding on to it, then he is equally entitled to the item as the other party, and that's where we have the din of our Mishnah, which is plogu, that they'll split it, ayudei shvua. But once he relinquishes that achiza, and through silence allows the other person to take the tfisa, the other person comes muhzak in the davar, and therefore he would have to substantiate or bring ra'ayot to his claim in order to remove it from the possession of the other party. But do we say here that the silence here is acquiescence? Oduma came into katsava hashto, but or does he say in the end when he's screaming about it and saying that it wasn't his, igle milta dahai deshaktik mikara, that demonstrates for us that retroactively we understand now what his silence was up front. Savar haka chazulei rabbanan. This is all taking place in front of Beit Din, and since Beit Din is a witness to this, it would be impossible for a change in the status of the item to take place while the Rabbanan, while the Beit Din is watching this. That was the underlying assumption in the Gemara before. As long as the guy is screaming when the other party took it away, there's no way that a person can get a chazakah in the item in front of Beit Din while the other party is demurring. Rabbi Zeira's question then is, how, in this scenario, do we judge the situation? Because had he been remained silent the whole time, that would have been the equivalent of some admission or allowing of the object to go into the possession of the other party. Had he screamed the whole time, that would have been a demonstration of his ownership and not giving up the rights. Here, where he's silent up front and only screams in the back end, what does that do? Does the screaming in the back end and the objection in the back end reflect something about the front end? And do we say, therefore, when he rejects it or objects in the end, that is because he believed up front that the Rabbanim were watching and then they wouldn't assume that there's a chazakah here by the movement of the object? Or do we say that really his silence up front was some sort of a form of admission And now he's trying to take that back, and it won't be efficacious because he's already allowed the object to move to the hands of the other party. And so Rabbi Zera's question is, a tkifa, the grabbing of the object of the other person's possession under such circumstances, what is the din? I'm Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman tries to bring a proof to answer the question of Rabbi Zera by finding a case that's similar. Our Mishnah that says Shnayim Ochuzim B'Talit, when is the din of our Mishnah true? When both of them are holding on to the Talit. Aval Haita Talit Yotzat Mitachad Yado Shel Achad Mehen. On the other hand, if only one of them is Mukhzak holding on to the Talit, then the din would be Motzi Michavero Lavaraya. Then the burden of proof would be on the party who wants to remove it from the possession of the individual who is holding on to it, the one who has the Chazaka on the object. Hey, dummy, what exactly is the scenario? Inema Kiditani. If you take this literally, that one guy is holding on to the talit, they come into court, pshita, that's a straightforward case. There's nothing unusual about this case, that if one person's mukhzak in the item, that will demand the other party to bear the burden of proof to remove it from his possession. You don't need a qualification of our Mishnah to tell us that din. Ela, it must be that the case here, shetakfa achad bifaneinu, that the case here is when one person grabbed it out of the hands of the other person in front of us. And that would be the similar case or the question that Rabbi Zera had. The assumption being here that Rav Nachman, when he says takfa echad bifaneinu, it is a similar case, as Rashi notes, to Rabbi Zera's case. It's a case where he was silent in front and then objected in the back end because otherwise it's pshita, as we saw before in the question of Rabbi Zera. So Rav Nachman says this qualification of the Mishnah must be speaking about the same case as Rabbi Zera, and here we have an answer that it's a motzi mechavero lavaraya, that the object does move to the possession of the party that was tokef it, in a situation in which the counterparty was silent and then only objected afterwards. The Gemara says, "Lo, that's not the explanation of that qualification of the Mishnah, but hachel mayaskinan. The qualification is the following. They come in front of us while both of them are holding on to it. Vamrinu luhu zilu plogu. Beit Din instructs them to go and split the item based on the din of our Mishnah, Shnayim Ochzim B'Talit, that they should go out and split it. V'nafku, they go out to split it, V'adar Atu, and then they return to the Beit Din, Ki Tafis Leichad Minayu, and all of a sudden only one of them is holding on to it when they come back into the Beit Din. Hayamar, so he explains why he's holding on to it now. Odiye Odili, he admitted to me that it's really mine, and therefore I'm in possession of it now, and that's why it's in one person's possession, and he should have the motzi mechavero lavaraya. Vayamar, and the counterparty says, bidmei agarti niale. Says, I rented it out to him, I sold it to him for cash, and that's why he's holding it now. Damrinale, the Beit Din says to this guy who rented it out or sold it to him, ad hashta chashatle begazlan. Until this point, you assumed, or you are making the claim that this individual is a thief, because he's trying to take away something that belongs to you. You're willing to rent it to him, sell it to him without witnesses? You're a fool. There's no way that you would trust this guy. And your claim now is not a claim that has validity to it. And it must be that he is right, that you admitted to the fact that it's his, because you would never have given it up for the promise of money or the promise of rental income, unless there were witnesses to the fact, because of the history that you two have together, which you are fighting over this object. And therefore, we say that it is in the possession of the other party. And now, motzi mechavero lavaraya. Then the party now, the counterparty makes the claim that he sold it to him, has to bring proof to the fact that either he did sell it to him, or proof and demonstrate through a deem that it is his in order to get it back, because the other party now is mukhzak in the item. The Balei HaTosafot point out over here, if the party said the reason that he's holding it all now is because he grabbed it away from me, then Tosfot says that he will be believed. You can see that in the Tosfot because he says, "Ve'enu neman b'migo." He's not believed in amigo that he could have said to be amar takfa mimeni, because he could have said it was grabbed away from me. So you see from the Tosfot, had he just said that the guy grabbed it away from me, he would be believed and he would retain his equal chazaka on the object like the counterparty. But by the fact that he said that he sold it to him or he rented it to him, that's what makes him lose his nemanut, because he did something that makes no sense in the case. And Tosfot says, well, he should be believed by amigo, because he could have made a claim to the fact that he stole it away from me, he grabbed it away from me, and there he would be believed. And now he made this claim, so he had a better claim. So that should give him nemanut in the claim that he made, which is a poorer claim. Tosfot says it's not considered a migo because migo b'makom edim hu. It's a migo where there's edim, the edim being that anan tzadeh that the other guy is holding it now. And therefore his migo doesn't take effect. But what you do see from the Tosfot is that in a case where had he just made the claim that the guy grabbed it away from me, he would have been believed in that situation and it would go back to the older status of them both now being jointly muhzak in the item. Whereas the Rambam disagrees with the Balei Tosafot over here and say that the person has no claim over here, even if he says the other guy grabbed it from him, the fact that he's no longer muhzak in the item loses him the right to be considered an equal party to the other individual who's holding on to it in terms of being muhzak in the item. Vibayitema, and some suggest that this qualification Bat Rav Nachman on the Mishnah is to teach us the following chiddush. Kedektani, the atu lekaman kitafis lechad minayu, that it's a regular case where one of them is holding on to and they come in front of us. Vidach misrach basiruche, and the other party is holding on to the strings or the edges of it. He's clinging to it. He's trying to wrest it away from the other guy. So one party has like a full hold on the baguette or the talit. The other party has a small hold or a strings hold on the item. So this is not a chiddush in the Rabbonin. Of course, for the Rabbonin in that case, the party that's holding it is considered to be the muhzak in the item, and a motzi mechaver of alaraya. But really, the chiddush here is in the shita of sumchus, which is sumchus who normally says, afilu l'sumchus damar mamon umutah b'safek chokim b'lo shvua. That generally when you have mamon, that is, b'safek, in doubt as to who the owner of the item is, we split it between them, even without a shvua. Moda sumchus. Sumchus agrees in this scenario, the sircha lav klumho. His holding onto it by an edge or by a thread is not considered to be a chazak on the item, and therefore there's no real safek. The one who's holding it is really the muhzak in the item, and therefore there'll be a din of a motzi mechavero lav araya. And that's the chiddush over here in this qualification brought by Rav Nachman, which is b'med varimim shnei machdukim, when they're both fully holding onto the item. But if it's coming out of one of them, not entirely, the other guy has a small hold on it, even there, Sumchus agrees that that's not sufficient to make you mukzak in the item, or generate a safek that normally would be concluded with ma'amona mutaba safek chokim. That would not be the scenario over here. The Gemara now says that Rav Nachman's case is definitely not a solution for what Rabbi Zera asked. So now we're going to move on to a different view or question that surrounds Rabbi Zera's situation or scenario. Im timsalomar takfa echad bifaneinu motzino tamiyado. If you believe that if one of the big guys grabbed it in this scenario of Rabbi Zera, where he's silent up front and then he objects afterwards, that Beit Din would remove it from the party that grabbed it away, hikdisha einu mikudeshet. Everybody would agree in that case that you cannot make it into hikdish. Now Rashi seemingly claims that that's only true after we return it to the other party. But it seems from Rashi that that's only as long as he wasn't tokefit. He didn't grab it. Meaning that if he was trying to be makdishit, that hekdesh would not be successful, because just like the grabbing it physically is not successful at bringing it into the possession of that party, because Beit Din then will force them to put it back to the original scenario, split it, ayyidei shvua. So too, if one of them tries to be makdishit, which is a mechanism for wresting control from the other party, because hekdesh, as we're going to see in a minute, the verbal sanctification of an item is the equivalent of a transaction or a physical exchange between parties. So if tkifa is unsuccessful at taking it out of the possession of one individual, so too hekdesh will be unsuccessful at taking it out of the possession of one of the parties. Rashi says, but if one of the parties grabs it away, then you would have the ability to makdish it, at least misafek, it seems like, maybe even bevadai, because it's in his possession at that moment. And even though generally we believe that you can't be makdish something that belongs to someone else. For instance, we've had the example before, I'm going to see it again, by a gazlan who steals something, that the failure of the gazlan to own the item, even though it's in his possession, makes it that he can't be makdishit. And so too, the balim can't be makdishit because they don't have control, even though they have ownership. Over here, it's different. Because first of all, the individual who is taking it or grabbing it away was muhzak in the item already. So he's not considered to be a gazlan. And number two is, once it's fully in his possession, it might be that he really does own the item. And when he's makdishit, at least that maybe should be chal misafek, because he has it in his possession at that moment. Even though then we're going to split it or force it back from him, at the moment it's in his possession. And he took it without stealing it. in that instance, maybe the Hekdesh should be Chal. Although there are Achronim who think that Rashi believes that it has nothing to do whether it's in his possession or not in his possession, but the mere fact that it cannot be Minadin kept by this individual must be forced by Beit Din to return it to the state beforehand, which is to split it, that's enough of a reason to say that he doesn't have the power to be Makdishit in this case. Even though from Pashtut of Rashi, where he says Hekdesha b'lo Tkifa, that Enu Mikudeshit makes it sound like had he been Tokefit, he would have been able to be Makdishit. Alright, so that Suffolk exists in the scenario here if he actually has it in his possession. But if he never is Tokefit, but just Makdishit, it's clear here from this side, if you believe the answer to Rabbi Zeira's question is that Beit Din will return it to the old state, that you can't be Makdishit. Imtim Solomar Takfa Echad Befenenu Ein Motzina Domiyado. But if you believe in the scenario that Rabbi Zeira posed, that he's silent up front and objects in the back end, that Beit Din would not intervene to help him out, and we would leave it with the party that grabbed it away, Hekdesha b'lo Takfa Mayhu. If he's Makdisha without grabbing it away, what is the din here? Kemen damar mar amirato legvoa kemisirato lehejotami. As I mentioned before, the generation of Hekdesh is the equivalent of a transaction between parties, or in essence, a physical transaction is simulated through the verbal expression of sanctification. So come on to talk for dummy. He is, in a sense, doing the same thing as grabbing it away from the other party. He could grab it away, and then Beit Din won't remove it from his possession. Or he can grab it away through being Makdishit. That's another type of grabbing. It's a grabbing that's not a physical grabbing, but it's a grabbing through sanctification, which does the same thing verbally to grab away the talit from the other party. And since that's the case, he could be Makdishit, even though they're both holding on to it right now, because he's simulating a takfa, as if he grabbed it away from the other party, which, if we concluded in Rabbi Zeira's question, that would not be removed by Beit Din, that would be sufficient grounds to allow him to be Makdishit. Vilma Hashta Mia Halo Takfa. Or do we say that since he has yet to physically remove it from the other party's hands, Uchtiv, and we have Ish Ki Akdishit Beito Kodesh Lashem, Ma Beito Birshuto, just like his house is in his possession fully, Avko Birshuto, so to anything that is in his possession must be fully in his possession to be Makdishit, Afuki Hai Delo Birshuto. To exclude a case here when it's not in his possession, this is something that is told to us about the din that Rabbi Yochanan spoke about in Baba Kama and Kedushin and other places, which is that you need two things in order to qualify to be Makdishin item. You need ownership and you need control. Both of those items are necessary prerequisites in order to be Makdish an item. We learned that by the case of the Gazlan, where there is no Yeush Balim, that the Gazlan is unable to be Makdish the item, because even though he has possession of the item, he doesn't own the item. The Balim are unable to be Makdish it, because even though they own the item, they don't have possession of the item. That deficit prevents both parties from having the ability to be Makdish the item. And similarly over here, the fact that the item is now being held by both parties is a deficit in control of each party. That deficit in control might make it that you can't be Makdishit, based on the Pasuk, that absolute control is necessary in order to be Makdish the item. And therefore, even if we concluded by Rabbi Zeira that had the guy grabbed it away physically, Beit Din wouldn't force him to return it, nevertheless, in the case of Hekdesh, there's a higher threshold for allowing you to be Makdishit, and he hasn't crossed that threshold yet because of the other person holding to the other side of the talit. And even though Hekdesh looks and works like the equivalent of a physical transaction, still Hekdesh needs even more than that. Hekdesh needs both ownership and control in order to be Makdishit, and that would fail over here. As Tosfos notes over here, the scenario is the same scenario as Rabbi Zeira's case, which is when he's Hekdesha below Takfa, Mayrinami Kagon Shatak Bishash VeHekdesh. He was silent when the individual was Makdishit. Ubisof. In the end, when the Gizbar comes to collect it from him, Tzavach, he starts screaming about it and saying, it's not yours. And the question again is, do we say that the silence up front meant that he acknowledged the other parties grabbing it away from him through Hekdesh? Or do we say the fact that he remained silent is because he didn't believe the Hekdesh was successful? He didn't believe the other guy could be Makdishin and take it away from his possession. And therefore, he only begins to scream when the Gizbar comes to collect it, and he says, it's mine, you can't take it away from me. So again, the same safek that Rabbi Zeira posed is being posed in this question as well. And therefore, if we were able to come to a determination about the din of Rabbi Zeira, we would also then be able to come to a determination about the ability to be Makdishit. The Gemara's conclusion is that Hekdesh is possibly different than Tkifa, And therefore, even if you were able to conclude about the tkifah that you're not allowed to remove it from the party who grabbed it away, still we would have a safek about the hekdesh. So now we're left actually with two sfeikot. We have Rabbi Zeira's question, which is, if the person grabs it away, does it remain in his possession under the circumstances mentioned here, where he's silent up front and then he demurs in the back end? And number two is, even if we believe under that scenario of Rabbi Zeira that we would not take it back from the party that grabbed it away, what would be his ability to be makdish it without grabbing it away? Because even there, hekdesh, we have two tzadim. One tzad that says it works just as well as tkifa. The other tzad that says still there's a higher threshold for hekdesh, and therefore you can't come to any conclusion about this. So the suffix, as noted by Tosafot, is whether the shtika over here is because considered to be an hoda'ah, similar to the way it works like Rabbi Zeira, because is the shtika vis-a-vis the hekdesh an indication of his admission, or simply the fact that he doesn't believe he needs to say anything, and then when he objects in the end, that's what gives us the sense that his silence up front was not because he really agreed, but simply he didn't believe that anything was happening. How can you be makdish my item? It just doesn't work. On the other hand, you could explain the question here, and similarly, this is the way Rashi approaches it, which is that, do you have sufficient ownership here in order to be makdish the item? Do we say that since each party here has a right of tkifa, and that right of tkifa would take it totally into their possession, as long as the other party is silent up front and then only objects in the back end, then the counterparty's claim to the object is not strong enough to block his possession to be makdish the item. So the Gemara now tries to bring a proof from a case of Tashma Mehai Masuta, from a merchatz, a bathhouse, Dabu Mansei Ala Beitrei. The two individuals were arguing about it. Hayamar Didehu, one of them says it's mine. Vahayamar Didehu, and the other one says it's mine. Kam Chad Minayu Akdusha. One of them got up and was makdish the merchatz. Parshimina Rabbi Hananya, Rabbi Shaya, Vekulu Rabbonon. The Rabbanan, after this individual's makdishit, refused then to enter into the bathhouse or utilize the bathhouse because they were obviously choshesh for the fact that this individual was makdishit. So now, the reason now with this case seemingly is a similar scenario to Rabbi Zeira is that we're talking about a bathhouse, which is a binyan, a structure that's already built and is mechubar the karka and is on the ground. The Gemara later on in tomorrow's daf will discuss the details of the case, what the conclusion to the case is, and how this answers our question. But just up front, the nature of the proof is the fact that this is a binyan that is deemed to be karka. With karka, we believe karka eina nigzelet. You have no ability to steal karka away from the parties. That means over here, both parties are muhzak in the property because neither of them is relinquishing their claim or their right to the land. So it's the equivalent of two people coming in, shtay mokzim betalit, that walk into the beitin. Over here, it's equivalent of two people holding on to their possession of their rights in the karka. So here we have a similar scenario where two people are fighting over this quote-unquote karka, and then one of them unilaterally takes an action to be makdishit, and we see that he is successful in being makdishit by the fact that the Rabbanan then refused to enter into the bathhouse. And so from this, that would seemingly be an answer to our question, which is that if we believe that the tkifa is successful, then he would also be able to be makdishit even without a tkifa. Because in this scenario, the din is, as Tosua points out, called the olim gavar. Whoever has the stronger situation, the upper hand here, wins. Whether that means to wrest physical control away from him, or it means that he has the better rayot over here, he is the winner in this case. So if you say called the olim gavar would be the outcome in this scenario, then when the one person is makdishit, we say the fact that Kol Dalim Gavar would have succeeded in giving him rights here, that also succeeding in allowing him to be makdishit and push it out of the possession of the other party. So you see that hekdesh does work when you have some sort of legal rights to grab it away from the other party, whether it's Kol Dalim Gavar, in our case over here, where it's takfa, where he grabs it away and Beit Din won't remove it from his possession. And so this would be a proof or an answer to our question that yes, you can be makdishit in place of being tokefit, just like by the case of the Merit Demerchatz, you can be makdishit instead of called Alim Govar. Tosfot on the previous Amud spells out the exact safek, which is that if we believe called Alim Govar, when the one person supersedes the other party's ownership over here and overcomes him and takes control of the item, he will become the mukhzak in the item. And the other party will be then, he'll have the burden of proof to remove it from his possession. If we believe once he does that, the case is over. And even if the second guy comes screaming or grabs it away from him, it's unsuccessful. It will not do anything. It's only the first party that grabs it is successful. Then we would say that if he's makdishit, he's also successful being makdishit because he can gain rights that are irreversible in this property. On the other hand, if you believe that kol de'alim gavar is reversible, which is if he takes control of it, then the other party pushes him out and takes control of it. And if the second party comes and does that, we would leave him in there. That means that they have, in a sense, a balance of rights here. Each party can push the other party out, then it can go back and forth. If that's the case, then the hekdesh will not be successful in this situation because both of them have that equal right to push the other party out. And therefore, this would be similar to our case by the takfa in our Mishnah of the Shnei Mokzim. And from this, we would conclude, seemingly, the Gemara again discussed tomorrow exactly how this case parallels and what the outcome is, that the halacha should be that you can be makdishit and that you have the right to be tokefit. That if you have a right to be tokefit, then you also have a right to be makdishit, even if you are not tokefit. And Rashi over here notes that the case of the Beit HaMerchat is not a case where the individual was silent and then objected afterwards, because in this case, even if the person objected up front, the party that takes control of the Merchat still gets that control because it's called the Olim Gobar. The din here is different than the case of Shnei Mokzin B'Talit, and therefore, even if he was screaming about it, called the Olim Gobar, whoever has the stronger hand here takes possession, then it doesn't matter what the other party is doing. But in the case that we mentioned of Shnei Mokzim, as well as the upcoming cases in the Gemara, Rashi is clear that those cases are cases where he's silent up front and then only objects in the back end to parallel it to the case of the Mishnah. But in this case of Bei Mesuta, he doesn't say that because it's not necessary over here. The case can be similar even in a case where the guy is objecting up front. Amar le Rav Hoshaya the Rabba. So Rav Hoshaya says to Rabba, Ki azlat kamed Rav Chista the Kafre. When you get to Rav Chista and Kafre, boy mine. Ask him this question, pose this question to him. So Rabbi Shaya and Rabba were probably in Pupudita. He's heading south in Bavel to go down to Kafri, where Rav Chista is. On the way there, Kiata the Surah, he passes through Surah. From Pupudita, he passes through Surah on the way to Kafri. Amarli Rav Amnuna. Rav Amnuna hears the question. He tells him about this question. Matnitani. He says it's a Mishnah. The question that you have is a Mishnah that is actually in Bichorot. And from that, you can conclude what the answer should be. Suffolk Bechorot. A case where you have a Suffolk Bechor. A Suffolk Bechor is a case in which it's the firstborn of the animal or the firstborn of a human being, a woman. Now, in that case, the firstborn is Kadosh Lashem and has to be given to the Kohen. You can be Podeh, the individual, 5 shekel to Podeh, the child. And the Behemah goes to the Kohen. And if it doesn't have a Muminit, it'll go on the Mizbeach. But as a Muminit, the Kohen will eat it. Bimumo. But those both belong to the Kohen. But there are times where it's a safek. Whether that's echad b'chor adam, echad b'chor beima, whether it's with an adam or beima, bent orim, bent meim, whether it's with animals that are behemot, kshirot, where the din of b'chor applies, or a peter chamor, where this is the only tamei animal, the non-kosher animal where the din of b'chor applies, hamutzi mechavero alav araya. The burden of proof is on the one who wants to remove it from the one who's in possession of the item. The safek here arises from the fact that the animal or the woman had a miscarriage beforehand. We aren't certain as to whether the miscarriage beforehand was sufficiently mature or in duration of the pregnancy to be considered a birth. And if it's considered a birth, then that nafel, that miscarriage, was the bechor. And then it's no longer peter rechem when she gives birth to the next child or the next animal. On the other hand, if the nafel, the miscarriage, was in a state which is not considered to be a birth, then the child born afterwards or the animal born afterwards is a peter rechem, and therefore we kadosh bibechora. So that's the safek we're faced with now. We have such a child that is born or such a behema that is born. The Mishnah says that in that scenario, hamotzi michavero olav araya, whoever is in possession of the item, will have the upper hand, and the other person will have the burden of proof. Seemingly, if the owners have it, the Kohen will have the burden of proof to show that this is a Bechor in order to get it. Or if the Kohen is in possession of it, then the owners will have to bring proof to show that it's not a Bechor. B'tani Allah, and that, about that we said, Asurim b'gizavoda. Because it's a Safek Bechor, we don't allow you to shear it or do work with it, which is the din of a Bechor. Meaning that misafek, we give it kedushat Bechor. V'ahacha. In this scenario, the Amar Takfa Kohen, Ein motzino to miyado. With this scenario, it seems clear from the Mishnah that if the Kohen grabs it away, we would not take it away from him, because the Mishnah says, Hamotzi michavero alavareya, and the Mishnah makes no distinction between whether it's the Balim or the Kohen. So from that, you would conclude if the Kohen grabbed it away, and again, they are both have equal rights, quote-unquote, in this animal, because the Balim are the owners of the animal. The Kohen is entitled to the animal if it has Kedusha, and it's granted to him, min HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is the equivalent of Shnai Mokzim B'Talit, or two people who are fighting over a bathhouse. They are fighting over this Bechor. The Mishnah says, HaMotzi Mechavero Lavaraya, which means whoever's in possession of it has the upper hand. The indication for the Mishnah is, if the Balim are holding it, again, they have the upper hand. But if the Kohen has it, he has the upper hand. The only way the Kohen's going to have it is if he grabbed it away from the Balim. So what you see here is that Takfo Kohen, if the Kohen grabbed it and had it, then the Balim now have the burden of proof, and it remains with the Kohen. V'chilo Takfo, when the Kohen does not grab it, Asurim B'Gizavoda, then the animal is restricted in Gizavoda. What Rav Amnuna is suggesting from the Mishnah is, why is this animal Asur B'Gizavoda? Why does it get a Safek Din of a Bechor? Is because of the Kohen's ability to grab it away. The Kohen's rights in this animal, which exist from his ability to take it away from the owner, and then have the owner bear the burden of proof to remove it from the hands of the Kohen, in that instance, it shows that the Kohen has some sort of ownership or rights in this animal. Those rights are what are bestowing upon the animal the Kedusha, that makes it that you can't do work or shear the animal, that it has Kedushat Bechor. So Rav Nuna's conclusion is that, look, you see, the reason the animal is Kadosh is because of the Kohen's right to be Tokefit. So you see from here that when the Kohen is not Tokefit, the fact that the animal reads Kadosh means that Kedushah, or the ability to be Magdishit, is on par with the right to be Tokef. And even when you're not Tokefit, the Kedushah is Chal, the animal becomes Kadosh B'Kedushat Bechor. And so from there, he wants to conclude that if you believe that Takfa Kohen is successful, so too Hekdesh without Tkifa would be successful, because here the Bechor becomes Kadosh, even though the Kohen never actually takes physical possession of the animal. Just his right, if he grabbed it, to then become the Muchzak in the item, that's enough to make it Kadosh. Now, Tosfot points out over here that it's not clear that the Kohen has real rights over here, because the Baalim have a right to give it to whomever they choose. That's called Tovat Hana'ah. So Tosfot says that the Kohen might have to give, if there is monetary value to that option of to which Kohen he wants to give it, the Kohen might have to pay the Balim for that, because that is a right of the Balim that the Kohen has no way to take away from the Balim. So Tosfot plays around with what exactly the Kohen is going to have to give back to the Balim, or what right the Kohen has to take it away. But there are some rights, according to Rav Amnuna, and those rights allow the Kedusha to be bestowed upon the Bechor. Amarle Rabba, so Rabba who's traveling to ask this question, says back to Rav Amnuna about this proof, Kedushat Bechor Kamart? You're trying to prove that from Bechor? I will tell you, Takfo Kohen, Motzina Tomiyado. I would say, even if the din is that if the Kohen grabbed it, we would take it away from him. Nevertheless, Vafilu Achi, Asurim B'Gizah Bavuda. Still, the animal would still have a restriction of Gizah Bavuda, because the Kedusha doesn't come from the rights of the Kohen to take the animal, but rather the Kedusha Bameleah, shiny. A Bechor's Kedusha is bestowed upon it at the moment of birth. It's Peter Rechem that gives it Kedusha. It's Kedusha Meleah. It's Kedusha that happens by itself. So the problem here is that we don't know if this animal is a Bechor or not. If it is a Bechor, the Kedusha will be bestowed upon it automatically without anything, because just mere fact that it is a Bechor gives it the Kedusha, that the Torah imposed or dictates that the animal will have such Kedusha. And so therefore, when you're talking about Kedusha Bameleah, that's independent of any rights of the Kohen. And so Rabbi says, I could conclude that Takfa Kohen, we would remove it from him. He would have no right to hold on to it, and we return it to Balim. And yet still, there would be Kedusha Gizah V'Avudah Misafek. And so he says, here, you can't prove anything, first of all, from this Mishnah, because, number one, the two issues are not correlated. Over here, the Kedusha is not because someone else is bestowing the Kedusha over here, or someone is imposing the Kedusha over here. Here it's dictated, min HaTorah, that it happens automatically. And so irrespective of what the Kohen's rights are over here, it will have no impact on the Kedusha that is here. And your proof is not similar to the case of our Shnai Mochzim. So from your proof over there, we can't see anything. So Amalei Rav Chananya, the Rabbo. So Rav Chananya now suggests to Rabbo, Tanya de Messiah. I have a braita that supports your understanding over here, which is, Hasfekot nichnasim ledir lehitaser. When you have a suffix bechor, it goes into the corral in order to have Ma'aser Behema taken from it. Now, Ma'aser Behema only applies to animals that are chulin, animals that are owned by the Baalim. He has to put them into a corral, let them walk out one by one, and every tenth one is subject to Ma'aser Behema. Here, the Braito is talking about a case of Sfeikot, a Safek Bechor. Now, we're going to see later on in the Gemara that a Safek Bechor is not subject to Ma'aser, but at this point, we don't know that. And the Gemara then will talk about a case where there are Safek Peter Chamor. A Peter Chamor is the firstborn donkey. That donkey is exchanged for a set, according to the Torah, and then that set is given to the Kohen. That set that the Peter Chamor is exchanged with is completely chulin. It's chulin whether it ends up in the hands of the Kohen or whether it ends up in the hands of the Baalim. So over here, where we have a Safek, in order to rid themselves of the Safek, the Baalim will then exchange the Kedusha, the Peter Chamor, onto the set. Once it's on the set, now we have an animal of chulin, which either belongs to the Kohen or belongs to the Baalim. But since it's a Safek, it's a Motzi Michavereo Lavareya, the Baalim are going to hold on to that animal and say to the Kohen, if you want it, you got to prove to me that that Chamor really was a Peter Chamor, really was a firstborn. But then the din is that those Sein, those sheep or goats that were used to exchange the Peter Chamor with, they have to go into the corral and then be counted towards Maser Bima. If you believe Takfo Kohen Ein Motzi in Miyado, if you believe that the Kohen grabs it, we would not take it away from his possession, Amay Nichnasim the deer. Then why would they go into the corral to be counted towards Maser Behema? Nimtza Zeh Puter Memono B'Memono Shel Kohen. Then it turns out that this individual is discharging his obligation with the money of the Kohen. He's taking animals that he has to now count them out to be Maser Behema. And then one of those animals possibly belongs to the Kohen, or maybe many of them possibly belong to the Kohen. And he goes in and counts his 10 out and marks them as Maser Behema. And now the Maser Behema, which he's allowed to eat and takes up to Yerushalayim and eats as himself as a korban, that could have been the Kohen's animal. It could belong to the Kohen. How does he have a right to do that? Now, if you believe, again, that the Kohen has a right to grab it and keep it, then he has rights in this animal. How could it be that the Baalim Yisraelim are then discharging their obligations vis-a-vis Maser Behema with the money of the Kohen? Even if it's B'Safek, they shouldn't be able to do it because of the rights of the Kohen to be Tokefit. The rights of the Kohen to Tokefit should block the ability of the Baalim then to do anything here. As Tosfot points out of here, V'chein hu amaskana. This is the conclusion, meaning this is the Psak Halacha, Dim Takfa Kohen Motzim Yado. The Kohen grabs it away from the Baalim, we do not let it stay with him. Rashi notes again, this is a case where when he grabs it, he's silent up front, and then he objects in the back end. In that scenario, the answer would be that we do return it. And since we do return it, then obviously his Hekdesh would not be successful in that case, because we correlated the two items. Based on this conclusion in the Gemara, like the Baalei Tosafot say that most Rishonim believe Takfo Kohen Motzino to Miyado, the exception that is the Rambam, who says Ein Motzim Miyado, and the Gro over here brings the Rashba's Shita as to why the Rambam believes that is such, because the case of Safek Peter Chamor is not a proof, because as we noted before, Peter Chamor goes through two stages. There's the Chamor itself is Bisafek, and then there's the Seh that is exchanged for the Peter Chamor. That said, the Baalim already took possession of. They are muhzak in the item. And that's why maybe Takfa Kohen has no rights over there, because the Baalim already took possession of it. But in a case where it was the animal itself that was the Safek, maybe over there you would say Takfa Kohen not be Motzi Miyado. So the Rashba explains the reasoning behind the Rambam Shita as to why he disagrees and doesn't think this is a proof. Like the Gra says, most other Rishonim in the Baalei Tosfot suggest that this is the conclusion, then Im Takfa Kohen Motzi Miyado. So I'm like, Abaye says back to Rabbo, Imi Shumha, lo to say the Mar. But that Braita is not necessarily a proof to Mar. Mar is his Rebbe. He uses that accolade or term both for Rabbi Yosef and for Rabbo, both of whom are his Rebbeim. And so Abaye says to it, that Braita that Rav Chananya is bringing is not necessarily a proof to you, my Rebbe, Rabbo. Hocha Mayaskina, what's the scenario here? Could go into late Leila Tisha. The Baalim have 9 animals that are chulin. Vehu Dimimanovshach. The 10th animal is this Safek Peter Chamor exchange for Peter Chamor. So Ibar Chiyuvu, if this animal really belonged to him, and he's obligated now to take off Maser Behema, he did that and he did it successfully. Ila Bar Chiyuvu, if the animal really belongs to the Kohen, then Tisha La Bar Esirininu, he only has 9 animals left. And so with the 9 animals left, he's not Chayav in Maser. So Mimon of Shach, he's not using the Mamon of Kohen to discharge his obligation. Because he would only be chayav in Meiser Beim if it was his, because he has exactly 9 animals plus this animal b'safek. If it belongs to him, he is chayav, and that's why he brings it at Meiser Beim. If it's not his animal, then there's no chiyuv Meiser Beim, because he only has 9. And therefore, he's not discharging his obligation with the money of the queen, because he's not even chayav to do Meiser Beim in that case. So Abaye says, I can set up that scenario, v'sveikot, nichnasim l'dir l'itaser, as a scenario where mimon of shach, no matter what the scenario is, it would be okay for him to do this and not prove anything about Takfa Kohen, because it's irrelevant whether Takfa Kohen can or not take it away. The only issue is it's this animal bisafek, and that animal tips the scale between 9 and 10 to whether he's chayav and meiser behema or not. Hadar Abaye lav milti damre. Abaye then backs away and says that what I just said to upend the proof from Rav Chananya is not correct. And that is the sveika lav bar sui. That is because a safek does not enter into the world of Meiser Behema. Even if you can make a claim of Mimon of Shach, even if you can make a claim that either way it would work out, that you should either put it in here or it will go in there and then it would or would not be Meiser Behema, that has no impact. You can only be Maser Behema or take off Maser Behema from animals that are Vadai Chulin and Vadai Chayavin in Maser Behema. It's none. Because now he brings a Mishnah to explain this scenario. Kafatz echad min haminyuin litochan, kulan turin. A scenario in which the individual is beginning his corral of animals to let them exit and count them for Meiser Behema. So as they are coming out, he counts them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All of a sudden, he's getting to the 6th one. One of the first 5 that went out jumped back into the corral. In that case, kulan turin. Everyone is patur from Maser Behema. Both the animals that already exited, as well as the animals left behind in the corral. If you think that even Misafek you would take off Maser, la'aser mimon of shach. Let him take off Maser no matter what. Which is, tibar chuyuvahu shapir Maser. If this 10 that he lets out afterwards are subject to Maser Behema, then fine. Bein la bar chuyuvahu niftar b'minyan haro'uy. And if it's not, he'll be niftar b'minyan ra'oi, which is that when the animals are counted, when they exit, that makes them patur from Meiser Behema. Dama Rava minyan ra'oi puter. Rava says that in a case where you have a count of animals, that removes them from the necessity to bring them to Meiser Behema. So for instance, if you had a case where you had exactly 10 animals in the corral, and he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they come out, then number 6 dies. So he no longer has 10 behemot to do Meiser Behema with. He's left with 9. The first 5 that exited already is Minyana Ra'ui. They were counted towards Meiser Behema, and at the time that they exited, they were Ra'ui to be part of Meiser Behema. They are no longer obligated to Meiser Behema. They're out. They're done. The 4 that remain inside the corral, those he will, if he has additional animals later in the season that are in a later go-in of the season that can be matched together, he'll add them to that and make them into 10, and they will join the others. But the ones that exited already are Patur. So what Abaye suggests is, if it's a case where the animal was already counted out and then jumped back in, all those animals, the Mishnah says, are patur. The animals that exited already are patur because they're minyan ra'oi. They were already counted. The animals inside are patur because it's a safek. Every one of those animals in there, it's a safek whether it was the animal that was already counted or it was an animal that wasn't counted. So that safek makes it that we don't take off Meiser Behema from all the animals. Even if there are hundreds of animals in the corral, none of them have Meiser Behema taken off of them. Tosfot over here questions why that is the case, because why don't we just say batel berov? Because even the concept of dover shebeminyan, that is not batel, that's only a din derabanan. But midoraita, it's batel berov. Why don't we say that the animal's batel here? The Rishonim, like the Rosh, answer the Tosfot's question by saying that this is a din in maser beima that says that you have to have a siri vadai, not a siri safek, and that's irrespective of the rov. That might have to do with how you view rov. When you say something is batel berov, we view the miyut as if it's not there at all. If that's the case, then why should there be any problem at all? And that's maybe Tosfot's question. The Rosh, on the other hand, says, no, but maybe the miyut still exists, and therefore there is technically still a safek here, even though we are machria al pi rov, that everything is fine. But because of that, Bayi says, in this scenario where you had one animal that was already out, jump back in, why don't we be mafrish them mimon of shach? You'll have 10 animals come out each time. If the animals there don't have the one that jumped in amongst them, then you're doing a great job. You have 9 that were chayav, and the 10th one becomes Meiser Behema, and everything's fine. Or if in the scenario that the one who jumped back in is amongst the 10 that come out in that series, then you're right. That series was not chayav and Meiser Behema, But nevertheless, they are patur from Meiser Behema now because of Minyan Ra'uy, because they were counted towards Meiser Behema, even though in the end it was never a successful Meiser Behema taken off of them. Tosfot over here adds a little twist in and says that over here that when you take them out, actually you'll count 11 each time, and you'll make the 10th and the 11th Kodesh Misafek. The 10th one, maybe it is the first 9 were Chayav and so is this one. Or maybe the Patur one was amongst them, and therefore you need to get to 11. And we have a din by Meiser Behema that represents Makdish, the 10th, and the 11th, that both of them are Mikudash. So Tosfot says you have to be Makdish the 11th in order to make it a Minyan HaRa'oi, because it had to be the possibility of reaching Maser to be Minyan HaRa'oi. But either way, what the Baye points out over here is that when we have a Safek, we don't demand that you take off Meiser Behema, even though it's a Mimonofshach, even though there's a possibility with hundreds of animals in there that you could take them out, and Mimonofshach you would hit at least some of those animals are real Meiser Behema, and the one that's not, you can solve the problem by saying it's Minyan Ra'oi, or according to Tosfot, you're Makdish the 10th and the 11th, and you've solved the problem. Nevertheless, we don't do that. What you learn from that is, Elamayit Chol Meimar, Asiri Vadai Amar Rachmana V'lo Asiri Safek. That the Torah says you only take off Meiser Behema from animals that are absolutely Chayavin in Meiser Behema, not animals that have any Safek associated with them. And so, in the case here, the reason that we don't force you to do this when the animal jumps back in is because now we have a safek. And that, according to the Rosh, is also why we don't have batul berov over here, because it doesn't matter. Even if you say batul berov, the safek precludes you from having to take off Meiser Behema, which is only applicable when you have 10 that are vadai. The same thing over here, by our case, Hochanami, Asiri vadai, Amar Rachmana below Asiri safek. So too, in our case, Abaye points out that my scenario that I created for the Braita brought by Rabbi Hananya is not right. I said it's 9 with the 10th one being a safek, and Mimonofshach, it works out. That's just not true. Because the animal is a safek, you would not take off Meiser Behema from it. So the scenario must be the scenario like you'd say, which is the whole reason by safek b'chor that we put it into the deer and we have you be mafrish the Meiser Behema is because the Kohen has no rights over here. And if takfo Kohen, we would force him to give it back. Since the Kohen has no rights over here, that's why we demand of you to put it into the deer, into the corral to count it and do Meiser Behema over here, because you have the full rights of ownership here unless the Kohen can prove otherwise. And since there is no safek over here, that is why it goes into the corral in order to be mufrash Maser from it. Not like I was saying that it's a case of safek where it's the 10th one, and that would have avoided having to deal with Takfo Kohen at all. So in the end, Rabbi Hananya's position corroborates what Rabba said, which is that Takfo Kohen, we would force the Kohen to give it back. Now the Gemara wants to understand, Amalev Acha Midifti Ravina, my Sfekot. What exactly are the Sfekot that we're speaking about here that you're saying belong to the Baalim and have to go into the corral to have Meiser Behema removed from them? You just told me that if it's a Safek, there is no Meiser Behema taken off of it. Ilem is Safek Bechorot. If you say that it's a Safek whether the animal was or wasn't a Bechor, Ia Kodesh Amar Rachmana, Velo Shekvar Kadosh. It says that Meiser Behema was only taken off animals where you are imposing the Kedusha on them, not animals that are already Kadosh. And a Bechor is Kadosh Mirechem. And if you have a Safek with a Bechor, it could be Kadosh, it may not be Kadosh. How would you put that into the corral in order to be Mafrish Meiser Behema? Ela Safek Pijon Peter Chamor Ukeder Rav Nachman. This is what we mentioned before, that the case of that Bright of Sfekot is a case where you exchange the Peter Chamor onto a Seh, and that's where the Safek is, like what Rav Nachman says, Damar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua, Israel Sheishlo Asara Safek Pitrei Chamor, a Israel who has 10 Pitrei Chamor, where it's a Safek, whether they're their firstborn or not, Betoch Beito, in his Goren, in his household, Mafrish Aleim Asara Sein, he Mafrish 10 Sein, and then Masren, he puts him in for Meiser Behema, Vein Shalom, and they belong to him. Because in that scenario, we're not dealing with the Peter Chamor itself. There is a real Safek, and that would be true of any Bechor, where the Safek is revolving around them. Once you've redeemed the Bechor onto the Seh, as far as we are concerned, is the Kedusha is gone. The Isur of Bechor has now been removed, and the Seh is Chulin. It's Chulin, whether the Baalim keep it or whether it goes to the Kohen. And therefore, since it's Kulin, it's Chayav in Meiser Behema. It would be Chayav in Meiser Behema if the Kohen had all 10 of the Sein. So too for the Israel. Now when he keeps them, it's Chayav in Meiser Behema. And so the case there is a case of Sein that were exchanged for the Peter Chamor. So there is no Kedusha on these animals because they are animals of Pidyon. Number two is the Kohen has no rights because we say Takfo Kohen, we would give it back to the original owner. And for that reason, the owner here has sufficient rights in the animal. It's Chulin, and therefore it's subject to Maiser Behema. But from that we would prove, like Rabba suggests, that Takfo Kohen Choser, it goes back to the original owner. And the way to explain the case of Bechor before the Rav Numa brought is because there, Bechor is Kadosh Me'elav. It's Kadosh by itself. There was no imposition of Kedusha. And therefore, even though the Kohen has no rights here, the Kedusha can still devolve upon the animal because it doesn't come from the Kohen. It comes from the dictates of the Torah. So we're going to stop here. Timeline's down on the top of Zayin of Aleph. The Gemara now is going to transition back to the original question of Mai Havi Alai Demisuta. What was the outcome there in the case of the bathhouse? What is the right Pesach Halacha? Because Rav Nuna tried to bring her proof. That proof was rejected by Rabba. And then Rav Hananya brought a proof to Rabba's position that that would be the case. So now we want to go back to the original scenario and say, fine, Takfa Kohen, he has no rights to keep it, we would give it back. Because the Kohen's rights in the animal are different than the case of the Mesuta, the bathhouse, or the case of Rabbi Zeira, where the two people are mechuzak physically in the item, either because it's karko or because they're holding on to it. So what's the din in that case? We've solved the interim cases, but now we want to go back to that original case of the bathhouse and Rabbi Zeira's question and come to a conclusion about the questions that we had posed there.